We'll call this meeting to order for Wednesday, November 8th. And we have a quorum. We have one presentation from Lincoln County Sheriff discussing service awards to seniors. Deputy Bruce McGuire and Citizens Appreciation Award to Angela Lerman. Is that right? Did I pronounce it right?
Good morning, Commissioners.
How are you?
Morning. I'm Curtis Landers, Lincoln County Sheriff, and I come to you this morning to present a couple of awards, to one to our member and one to one of our citizens. I'd like to have Deputy McGuire come up and Angela Lerman come up. So first of all, I'd like to recognize Senior Deputy Bruce McGuire and with the Distinguished Service Medal. The Distinguished Service Medal is an award presented to a member who is in the performance of his or her duties, performs an act of outstanding or especially meritorious service while demonstrating selflessness, personal courage, and devotion to duty. Now, this was from an incident that occurred on March 16, 2017, at about 9 p.m. Senior Deputy Bruce McGuire responded to a single vehicle crash on Highway 20 near mile post 30 up on Klein Hill. The vehicle left the roadway and was impaled by a guardrail trapping the driver. And we brought some couple of photos here just to show, and I know that maybe Deputy McGuire can go, but that guardrail basically went right through the car and right through the individual's leg, correct?
Yeah, came through the passenger or the driver's side and then exited out the passenger side.
So the photos still probably don't do it justice, but I mean, you can see how amazing that was to go through there and have someone trapped in there with the guardrail going through their leg. Senior Deputy McGuire, who has maintained his paramedic certification, was able to assist medical personnel by climbing into the vehicle to start an IV and place a tourniquet on the driver's nearly severed leg. Senior Deputy McGuire remained in the vehicle for nearly 60 minutes, providing direct patient care until the driver was extracted and transported by Reach helicopter to OHSU with life-threatening injuries. The first responder who observed Senior Deputy McGuire's action that evening commented, "Senior Deputy McGuire clearly displayed he maintains a high level of skill for critical injury response, the level of patience and knowledge that allowed him to easily integrate with the responding paramedics and Pacific West ambulance, regardless that his primary role is a law enforcement deputy, and that he personally commits to maintaining this skill for the good of those we serve." So I'd like to recognize Deputy McGuire here with our Distinguished Service Award. A little acrylic here for there, and then also a service pin so he can wear on his uniform.
Thank you, sir.
So I know that Bruce is a pretty humble individual and I would say modest, but when it comes to events like this, I was going to get to the good part. When it comes to events like this, he's going to be very modest and just talk about how this is probably just another day on the job, and that something that any one of us would do, and probably right. But Bruce takes that extra step and responding to these things and jumps in. I've seen it on other occasions where he's just demonstrated this, and it probably could have been awarded to him more often than not. When he was a paramedic, this was probably definitely a daily occurrence for him, but something happens like this, it's just extraordinary, and we really want to recognize our members for what they do, because, again, it's the character qualities that Bruce definitely possesses that makes it all worthwhile in what he does and saving a life, just the comfort for that person. So,
thank you, Sheriff.
During that event, though, however, we have Angela Lerman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we do want to recognize her because she was also there at the scene and with the Citizen Appreciation Award. The Citizen Appreciation Award is an award and or letter presented to a citizen for outstanding service to the Sheriff's Office or any Sheriff's Office member. Factors for consideration of this award include that the service went above what is normally expected of a citizen. And again, on that date, my office received an email. Actually, later on that, my office received an email from Pacific West Ambulance wanting to express their appreciation for the support they received from law enforcement and fire personnel on particularly difficult traffic crashes that occurred that evening. As my staff and I reviewed the email, it became obvious that the initial patient care provided by two good Samaritans, later identified as Angela Lerman, who was a nurse, and the Cassie Ray, who was a medical student, and I understand you guys were just happened to be coming through at the time, saved the life of this patient. And more details that were provided by paramedic Mariah Powers. Medic 503 was dispatched to a crash on Highway 20, approximately milepost 28. Toledo Fire was requested for assistance as well as air support. This was an extremely difficult extrication process that took at least 60 minutes to free the patient from the vehicle that was impaled on a guardrail. Two citizens who saw the accident stopped to help and place a belt as a tourniquet on a traumatic amputation of the patient's left leg, as well as held direct pressure over a large wound on the right leg. These two women made it possible for us to have an actual victim to extricate from the accident. Without their care, prior to our arrival, the patient would have died. The patient was flown to OHSU by Reach with severe life-threatening injuries and has at least one loss of limb. He is facing loss of other leg as well as due to the extent of damage per OHSU staff. The patient would have not made it out of this vehicle or to a trauma center without the hard work of all of these agencies working together. And want to know about there's any way to recognize the person for this, and there is. So, provided by Bruce McGuire, who's sitting right here, but I'll read what he said. When I arrived at the scene, I saw two women in the passenger side of the car attending to the victim. At first, I thought one of them may have been related to the victim and or a friend, as they were talking to him like they knew him. However, I found out during the rescue, they were driving by and stopped to help. The two had made a makeshift tourniquet with a belt on the left leg of the victim above the knee. This part of the leg was amputated and bleeding. The two of them were talking to the patient and reassuring him about what was going on around him. They stayed with him and provided a person to talk with him while the rest were working. It was only after we had the roof off and could gain access to the patient better that they had stepped back out of the car. I know their immediate care saved him from bleeding out. So we'd like to recognize Angela. Looking to work for citizen appreciation. We do have an award that we couldn't do here, so we have an award that we're going to pledge us sending for the nursing students so that we can recognize her also. And I believe
Pacific West Ambulance is here. Would like to say a few things during this.
All I know is that we would not have had a patient at all if it weren't for the bystanders that actually stopped bleeding as much as they could. He would have died before we got there. And Bruce, all I remember him doing is grabbing me and saying, "It's okay, we can do this together." So he probably has at least, I don't try and teach you more, at least double the experience I have. And so it was really nice to have so many extra hands on scene.
So, Sheriff. So what we're hearing here is that Bruce is humble and old. Don't worry, I think I'll be like that too, Bruce.
I've seen it, so I know.
Let's start.
But a very extraordinary event, and just again, one being a citizen just stopping, passing by to jump in and help out, just shows, just true humanity and the spirit of what it's all about, and then to have Bruce there help. You say what well to have these two individuals here absolutely save this person's life. And so I'm sure that they'll be ever forever grateful of it as we are. So
could I ask, Angela, what kind of training do you have? I mean, just going and putting tourniquets on if they're not done right, and sometimes exacerbate the problem. Do you have any medical training to do that?
She is a nurse, so.
Okay.
Yeah. The graduate of OCCC's nursing program, too, right? Last time I was in the hospital, she gave me some great care. Luckily, I wasn't in quite as bad shape as this person, but that's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's fabulous what you were able to do. Out in the field like that, it's tough.
Yeah, it was pretty nerve-wracking. But I really wish Cassie would have been here because I feel like we made a really good team. We had like this odd connection. It really, I don't know. She was amazing too.
So. Was she a nurse also?
She's a nursing student.
student at OCC?
No, I believe at Lynn Benton, I think.
So let me ask you another question about Red Cross programs. You must be in favor of that because you never know when you're going to run into these situations and the public can help if they have the right training. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Now, when we got there, I mean, obviously you're seeing kind of the aftermath. I mean, that had the entire roof and everything on it. And Angela and the other lady were inside the vehicle there on the passenger side. As you can see, the doors open on this side, but they had actually climbed up inside there. And we were dealing with that guy when we arrived and had to work around, just had them stay where they were at and worked around the patient, actually just having the fire department cut the roof off and everything so we could gain
access. You guys were right there inside.
Oh, we were right there inside.
That is an amazing picture. It's hard to believe anybody got away.
I didn't realize it was that bad at the time. Yeah, the pictures.
Yeah. Well, I'd just like to say that, you know, it's really hard to find the words, but I think it's rare when somebody has the opportunity to save the life of another human being. And the fact that the two of you did that without thinking about it and, basically saw a need and addressed it as commendable. So I really, again, find the words hard to say how much I appreciate what you did. So thank you.
Isn't there a Jewish proverb to the effect that if you save one life, you save all of humanity? The ripples from this. Kudos. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do you mind if we could approach with you and take a photo with that?
Sure. Be honored.
Up here, you guys. You want to
see it? Okay, Mariah, we want Mariah in the photo.
Sure.
We want to get it.
Yeah. Why they're not here, not doing very well here. Because what you said last week, I started.
I'm
a little older and self-conscious about the whole thing.
All right, everybody. Couple here.
Consent calendar items of routine nature of things you've previously heard. Is there anything you'd like to make comment on the consent calendar?
No, all looks like routine business. Mr. Chair, I would move for approval of the consent calendar as presented.
I'll second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. No public hearing, no decision and action items. We go down to discussion and information. And
Mr. Kenyon, you're up.
Lincoln County Fleet Vehicle number 1285200, our 2006 Ford Expedition SUV, to be declared surplus.
Yes, we've been asked by Fleet Services to have the board, I'm Roy King, the County Public Works Director.
I don't hardly recognize.
No Shave November.
Is this No Shave November, or is this Elk Hunting Tuesday?
No, this is actually No Shave November, actually.
Just giving you an opportunity to acknowledge.
Yes, and it's
what is the cause behind it?
The itchy stage. And so I may make my own donation so I can actually shave this off.
And what's the cause behind it?
It is for cancer. Anyway, I've been asked by Fleet Services to ask the board to declare this vehicle surplus. It was originally purchased from the Forest Service surplus, and so it's been around for a while. It was purchased for a vehicle to be used for the search and rescue. It was well used at the time of purchase. It has not been utilized the way that they thought it would be utilized. With search and rescue, it doesn't fulfill some of the needs. Some of the trailers that they had hoped to pull with it is not able to pull. Therefore, it's been used very little. And we're requesting that you declare it surplus so it can be auctioned off at the same time.
My only question, Mr. Chair, is why we've got this as a discussion and information item, because I thought surplusing of vehicles usually was pretty routine and we did it on consent calendar. Or is it because of the unique history of this vehicle?
Yeah, well, I think that part of it is when you look at the actual mileage of the vehicle, it doesn't appear to be very high.
Okay.
And that's so, close.
But it's had hard use, I assume.
Well, it had hard use before the county actually acquired it.
Right.
It was with Forest Service down in the Florence area. I guess it had been utilized a lot on the sand. It was well used then. But what I like to do is if a vehicle has a huge amount of mileage and a lot of years, mm-hmm. it's kind of a no-brainer as far as it's lived its life and it's time to move on. But when you have a vehicle that has relatively low mileage, I like to be able to get the backstory
okay.
so it's understood.
Makes total sense.
Why it is that it's time for it to go.
Okay, now I got a question. Since this was Forest Service and county vehicle, and you send it to the auction, where does the money go exactly when whatever the value is sold at the auction?
It will come back to the county.
Since we're the title holder.
We're the title holder. We actually purchased it through the federal surplus.
Okay.
The Forest Service. So we are the rightful owners. And then the money will come back to the police services.
Do we receive the full amount? Most auctions take so much money for handling.
I can't answer that question. I don't know what the percentage is.
Could you find out by, since you're going to sell it, what percentage returns on that, or if the state takes a commission for handling it?
I don't know the answer to that question, but I can actually find that out for you. I actually don't handle that part of it. Malmack actually is the fleet maintenance supervisor. He's the one that handles that. He's been doing business through the state surplus for years, and so I'm sure.
So remember, a few years ago, we had slightly honest Rob's used car dealer that the state finally said we couldn't do anymore. I was curious what. Why they were so, unless they received percentage of the money.
Right. I don't know the answer to that, but I'll find out.
They said, according to Rob, they said a lawyer wasn't a person, and so could not hold a used car license.
Wait.
Dealer license. He said that was the state, not, you know.
But we have a new lawyer sitting here,
right,
who doesn't usually in front of the camera, maybe should introduce her before we start picking on lawyers.
A new representative, not a new lawyer.
Well, you're not normally on camera.
No, I'm not.
Would you introduce yourself?
Sure. Kristen Yule, Assistant County Counsel. And Mr. Kenyon's correct, but we actually have a contract with the state to go on the surplus, and there is an administrative fee, but it's pretty low. It's less than 5%.
I'm assuming this would be auctioned off the same as any surplus vehicle.
Yes.
Or any vehicle that the county declares surplus.
It is.
And you did mislead me. I thought it was a dump truck, but now that I read the...
Oh, no. Exactly.
It's just the letterhead.
It's the letterhead.
Yeah. I know. I'm a visual guy, so I see the picture.
We don't have any dump trucks for sale at this time.
That's kind of interesting. I have a slightly older vehicle, 2005, and I think I'm at about 250,000 miles. gallons on it. So that gives you a perspective.
Yeah, that's pretty low mileage.
Yeah, very low mileage.
It is, and actually, in maintenance terms, it's harder on a vehicle to sit and not be used than to be used regularly. And so they actually decline rapidly when they're used.
Well, I think that's all the more reason to take action and declare this surplus, because there'll be more value now than later.
Right, and it's not actually being replaced by any vehicle.
Right.
Well, I'd be in favor of moving this forward to a consent item.
As would I.
Definitely.
Yep.
Okay.
It seems to be
Can we
right
have
decision.
An order prepared for future meeting?
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, I'll, yes, since we move down to reports. And we have elected officials' reports.
Well, Mr. Chair, can I mention that we will not be meeting as a board next week because we will all be attending at least some or all of the Association of Oregon Counties annual conference, and it will mark the conclusion of my year in the AOC presidency. We're going to have a couple of panels, at least I know of, involving Lincoln County. Actually, I think Commissioner Hunt is doing one, too. But I'm hosting two panels, one with our County Veterans Service Officer, Devin Whitaker, and a representative of Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, talking about the relationship between boards of commissioners and County Veterans Service Officers in the state. And another one where you and I will be joined by Tribal Chair Dolores Pigsley, talking about really the unique and, I would say, model relationship between our county government and the Confederated Tribes of the Sled. So, looking forward to the weekend. Commissioner Hunt, you've got a panel too, don't you?
There will be a panel on the maritime sector. Representative Rick Williams is actually a captain, heavily involved in marine activities, and also I believe it's the vice president of Clatsop Community College that will be talking about the development of maritime curricula and trying to involve our community colleges and certainly the Oregon State University Maritime Marine Studies Initiative. So talking about trying to move forward, and hopefully we'll be able to raise a little money to that our county provided to support the staff working on the task force that was passed by the legislature, created by the legislature.
And I have a resolution that I brought forward because it's brought the vet to try to get the other counties to be more recognizing of their role in maritime. I don't care what county you're involved, because a lot of the products that you either sell or purchase into your county come through the maritime industry. And then in the case of all the counties along the Columbia River, they have a major maritime industry in the towing, and a lot of wheat comes down that river. And
Morrow County has a huge port.
I was going to say, isn't the port of Morrow the farthest inland port in the country? I've heard.
I think it's in the state. I believe the port of Lewiston, Idaho, gets the distinction of being the furthest inland.
There you go.
But all of these counties have something involved here, and I think when we get all the numbers together and everything, they're going to find out it's one of the major industries in the state is actually movement of cargoes and products and things that related to the ocean. So hopefully we get support from other counties to
Your idea of a resolution was very good, and I can't imagine there would be any resistance to that in the conference. So look forward to moving that forward.
The reason I wasn't here last weekend is I OPAC, and then Saturday in the State of the Coast Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, the governor's office. That was in Astoria, so I spent the day up there discussing a multitude of issues. I didn't see one single major issue there. This one, you, since you're the chair of OPAC, did you want to talk? I mean, OPAC?
I was formerly the vice chair.
Well, formerly the vice chair, but you
Scott
chaired this meeting.
Chair.
You're welcome to come up and say make a comment since you're.
I could probably say the.
Well, come on up, you have to speak in front of the mic if you're going to say anything.
Okay. I was here just to listen, but
Well, if you're here, I'm taking advantage of it. Please introduce yourself.
I know you always like to take advantage of me.
But keep it short. You're a lawyer.
So the person asked me, now you want me to keep it short? Terry, you can't have it both ways.
I like to watch it squirm.
We can tell lawyer jokes.
I like to watch Terry squirm. We've served together for 12 years on thousands of meetings, and probably more than that, so we know each other pretty well. We had the Ocean Policy Advisory Council meeting last week. It was actually the last meeting for a number of members who have served for 12-plus years. Scott McMahon, our former chair, who many of you know very well, wasn't there, but he was presented with a nice certificate of appreciation from the Governor's Office for his years of service, and we had a nice reception afterwards. I would say we're giving up. I'm still on OPAC for the time being. I'm the city elected official representative on OPAC, but I'm looking for a replacement because my two terms are up, as well as many other folks who have served on OPAC. But we do have a number of issues that we're dealing with moving into the future. I would say the one that I would really like to see the county involved in very directly, and I think if Wayne was here, he would support that request, is we're going through another review and amendment process for the territorial sea plan. As you know, Part 5, which I was involved with in many different ways with respect to renewable energy, is currently before the Court of Appeals awaiting a decision as far as the procedure that was used at the state level with respect to the OPAC recommendation. Part 3, which is the Rocky Shores chapter or part in the Territorial Sea Plan, is going to go through a very rigorous public review and scoping process for the next several years. When we were at the OPAC meeting last week, Terry was there, I was there amongst many others. It's going to be about a three-year process that the state of Oregon through the Department of Land Conservation Development is going to be undertaking with a working group, similar to the working group that I chaired for the Part 5 process for about 6 or 7 years. I kind of like to look at it as ancient history, but it's still very much a part of what we're still dealing with. I would really like to see the county involved because that's going to be dealing with the intertidal areas of the coast. And as we all know, if the counties and the cities and the other local jurisdictions are involved, sometimes decisions are made that may not be necessarily in the county's, cities, and port districts' best interest. So I would really like to see either the county representatives on OPAC or some other county representatives involved in the working group. Right now, the working group is being put together by the committee and the executive committee on OPAC. Terry, you were there last week. They are going through an application process. So it's probably good timing because I'll be at the Association of Oregon Counties end of the meeting next week because the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association, which I'm the vice chair of, is meeting as part of that. As you know, the staff for AOC helps staff OCZMA. I'd like to at least have, hopefully you, Bill, Terry, and Doug can talk with your colleagues and see if there's any coastal county commissioners that want to participate in this working group process. It's not going to require a lot of time, but someone needs to be there to review documents and to make sure things are being done in a way that I think is consistent with what we try and accomplish through those processes. So anyways, that's the long version of what you asked me to keep short, but I really felt it was a good opportunity to bring that up.
It's very good. One other reason.
But I'll let you, if you want to give the other updates on OPAC, Terry, I'll let you do that.
No, go ahead.
There's a couple other things. The annual officer elections, because as you know, Scott McMullen was the chair of OPAC since I got on OPAC in 2005. I was the vice chair of OPAC for about 8 years, but we have new officers elected. Gina Carter, who's one of the conservation representatives, is now the chair. And Walter Chuck, who many of you know, is now the new vice chair of OPAC. And then the other issue that we brought up, and Terry, you've been involved in this quite extensively on the working group, is resiliency of the Delta Coast. You and Shelby Walker and others helped put together some different forums and documents, and maybe you want to speak to that if you'd like. I know that was a big topic of discussion. I'll let you speak to that. The other issue that came up, which many of you are aware of, is Senate Bill 1039. Has created what's known as the Ocean Acidification Hypoxia Coordinating Council. Now, OPEC has a role in that because we get to designate, in consultation with the governor's office, a seat representing the conservation organizations. But there's other representative members on what I would call the OAH Council. And many of you are aware of what's going on with this ocean acidification and hypoxia.
So I'd like to take a look at Senate Bill 1039. That explains it in more detail. And then other than that, we had a Marine Reserve update. I would say that this issue will become more in the forefront publicly in about 3 years when the legislature is going to do its, I guess, 10-year review. It's been under the radar, so to speak, after OPAC made its initial recommendation and that was put into statute. But I can guarantee it, when this comes up for review, whether to continue the Marine Reserves, whether to expand them, whether to lessen their area, that will bring up an entirely new, very, I'd say, very vigorous discussion up and down the coast. And I think Terry's smiling because he knows exactly what I'm talking about. And I'll leave it at that. Terry, thanks for the opportunity to speak. I was actually going to say a few words in public comment on this, but since you were bringing it up right now, this is a good chance. So with that, I'll just leave my comments to Terry as far as any additional things he wants to bring up as far as the OPAC meeting. But thanks again for letting me speak, and I'll just maybe see you stay here until you have any other questions.
You need to identify yourself.
Well, I thought you were identified. David Allen. I'm here as, well, I guess since I spoke for OPAC issues, I'm a Newport resident, and I'm currently the Coastal City Elected Official on OPAC. And the reason I'm a City Elected Official on OPAC is because I'm currently a Newport City Council member, but I'm not here in that capacity as a Newport City Council member, just as an OPAC person. Thanks again.
Thank you. I'll mention a little bit on resiliency. Resiliency is the challenge related to the potential for a major earthquake. And when it started, it worked on actually the original bill to bring it forward that night and saying it takes time to build a program because I've been around Japan a little bit of what they do. It takes time and it takes effort and money. And the discussion on resiliency is how do we get prepared and what do we have to worry about in each section of the state. I mean, the governor's had the committee and they're discussing, and it's interesting. Nobody sees it quite the same because no area of the state has quite the same problem. So it becomes a multitude of problems here. You know, we've done a lot of work in the county on resiliency, a lot of other parts of the coast have. And other motivated people and the cities and all of us work together to get it done. Of course, the major part of resiliency is trying to keep your transportation system going, trying to keep your electricity going, and that costs money. Hopefully that we find the money to make sure we can improve it. I think we have a long ways to go making those decisions here, partly because of our geography. So that's about mentioning resiliency. It's the ongoing discussion at this point, what we do and then trying to find the money to get it done.
And if I may,
sure.
I've had the opportunity to testify before the Oregon Transportation Commission several times, and that is frequently a subject that I bring up, is resiliency and seismic improvements that can be made along Highway 101, which I think will be the artery of our recovery efforts after the Cascadia event. So I echo your comments and your concerns.
Terry, just to jump in, one document that I think everyone would find very beneficial, and Terry, you know about this document because you and I and others were interviewed for this process. Some graduate students at Oregon State University, one of the professors there, interviewed a number of folks up and down the coast and went through all the different information that was available and put together what was kind of a report on resilience up and down the coast. It was a very well-researched report that OPAC helped put together with them. It was presented to a number of folks over the summer here at the Marine Science Center, and we had copies distributed to us at the last OPAC meeting, which was last week. I have it in PDF. I just really think it's a great document. The students did a fabulous job. I think, Terry, you have one, but since I have it pretty much regular available, I'll send it to Wayne and you guys so you have a copy of it, and so you can see what some of the graduate students spoke to, which is similar to what Terry spoke to just now.
See, you bring up a point. I hadn't thought of it before. That might be an appropriate document to put enter our website with a connection to it,
yeah,
because
sure.
It's
great document.
So it would be good because it's sitting on my shelf and it may collect dust. I mean, once I glanced at it, it's, but it, the public might be interested in what they found. And so could you see when Casey gets back here, if we can't, can you send us a PDF?
I'll do. And the other thing is, as you know, at the OPAC meeting last week, Shelby Walker has kind of helped put this process together. We drafted a letter, OPAC drafted a letter under the new chair's signature, which is still being somewhat revised, which is actually a letter along with the report being sent to Governor Brown to kind of outline what our what we have found out through this process and to kind of make some recommendations to Governor Brown and others as to how they might want to implement this report moving forward. And once that I'll get you the PDF of the document, but once the letter is finalized and signed by our new chair, Gina Carter, on behalf of OPAC, I'll make sure you get a copy of the letter, and then you can put that up there as well to show that this isn't just a report, as Clinton does. It's actually a report that OPAC has asked the governor and her state agencies and others to try and implement over the next couple of years.
Great. Very good. So then on epoxy and ocean acidification, of course, we have working on all kinds of corners on that, but it's interesting. We're trying to get more information. It's an important part of Oregon State University and Marine Science Center. It's a funding source, and now I'm hearing more and more rumbles in Washington, D.C. that they want to cut funding to this kind of research. And I think it's real. It will affect the ocean over time. We need a lot of science in order to be able to implement. Of course, the big hot subject now in the legislature, is whether it comes up this time or not, is carbon emissions and carbon tax credits and these kinds of issues. And the public needs to get abreast of this because it could come out of there in special session, which worries me because it really hasn't been thoroughly discussed. I'm not sure the public fully understands it. They're having hearings, but that doesn't mean public's engaged. It's just like when we first talked about tsunamis. It takes years to get people really engaged. And so I worry about moving too fast forward with one point of view and not having the whole public engaged in the area of carbon tax credits and whether or not it's something they want and how it affects them. I think the coast gets really affected. This is my opinion, because we are a long transportation corridor to most of our products, and we either send it or receive it. So we burn a lot of fuel. Plus, we have a fishing industry and a timber industry that burns a lot of fuel. We could have a sizable increase in fuel dollars that would be part of this tax credit scheme. And I have no idea how it's going to come, but I'm just saying the public needs to get abreast of what's happening. We are a rural county, and we have, and then whether or not much money would come back to us to improve anything is another question. So that's just one comment. It isn't necessarily ocean acidification, but it's all wrapped up in this whole global warming and how do we deal with it. So, okay, with that, thank you.
Well, thanks for inviting me up, and I was providing some of that background.
Yes, no, I'm glad you did. Constituent input, besides you, do you have any other comments you want to make or constituent input?
No, I think that was, well, the one thing I'd like to do is just make sure, Terry, you'll be there next week at our OCCMA meeting. We're meeting on November 14th from 10 in the morning until noon at the Hilton, where you're having your annual meeting. It's 2 hours, not going to be very long, but we have actually really a number of interesting issues. And Bill, I don't know whether you or Doug were going to stop by and just listen in, but we're going to get some interesting updates that I think you might be interested in if you have the time. I know there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I have three meetings at exactly that time.
But I just wanted to invite you to the OCCMA meeting next week. Even though you're represented by Terry, it's always nice to drop in, especially if you're in the building. So.
I appreciate that. I will be in the building, the AOC sophomore seminars at the same time, and I'm on the program for that. But I think there's some that doesn't overlap, so
okay.
I'm going to try and at least be there to see some of it.
I will be there, but I've got, like I say, three meetings at that time, but that's one advantage. We do split up the workload between all the commissioners, and we'll find a natural fit for and we'll try to be as all we can in all these issues.
Well, anyway, thanks for inviting me up, and you've got my name and my place of residency on the record, so I'll leave it at that, and I'll see you next week, Gary, and probably see you guys as well.
Okay, David, thanks.
Okay, you don't have an executive session, so...
Constituent.
Okay. Well, I did. That was for that. And helped the lawyer.
I don't know.
Okay. With that, I don't see anything else. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, November 22nd, here at the Board of Commissioners room at 9:30 in the morning. Meeting adjourned.